everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace, and I have a real special treat for all you listeners today. Someone I've known for a while. I think a lot of you listeners will recognize the voice. You've seen him on things like DC All Access. He's got his own title that's come out recently from Action Labs that we're going to chat about today. It's Jason Inman. Welcome to the show, Jason. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to talk about all things comics.
Yeah, so before we dive into your Jupiter Jet title, and then we'll talk about a few of your other projects, I wonder, for any of our listeners that aren't familiar with you, what's your history with comics? Did you grow up reading them? Is that how you learned to read? Did you always love them? Like, what's your background there?
My first comic book actually was Batman 466. Now, I don't remember exactly when I bought it, but it was somewhere around the time of the Michael Keaton Batman movie. So it was either after the first Batman or Batman Returns. I'm just not certain about that. But I remember seeing that movie and going to Walmart, because in those days, Walmart had comic racks. And that's where I found all my comic books, because I didn't live anywhere near a comic book store. And there was this cover of Batman tied to the bottom of a rocket, like a spaceship rocket. And it looks like it's going to go off. And I had to know what was going to happen. And I actually still have that issue. It is really cool because that's one of the early Tim Drake issues where Batman's not 100% certain about Tim Drake if he's going to work out as Robin. So I kind of like that I have that issue. And that led into me buying the trade paperback of Death of Superman from a gas station. Again, I come from very small town Kansas, so nowhere sold comic books except for weird grocery stores and Walmarts and gas stations. And I read Death of Superman and I loved it. And I actually thought he was going to stay dead. But from there, I was so intrigued by like everybody that showed up to his funeral. And it was the first time that I realized that DC Comics was a shared universe. And I really became intrigued by them because I wanted to know like who was everybody. And that's basically, from there, I was in like Flynn and I was reading comic books everywhere. It even extended to where I read news strip comic books, because I would go to the library and they'd have like the complete collections of Ziggy and Peanuts and Garfield and Heathcliff. And I read all a Family Circle, and I probably read the entirety of almost every famous news strip ever.
Wow. And about how old were you when you kind of discovered these awesome worlds?
Oh man, how old was I? 7 or 8.
Wow. Yeah. So that's right around this, my same age, although, you know, a little earlier than you, not to date myself. So Jupiter Jet, Action Comics, that's it's a big step to go from a fan of these things to actually creating your own title. So what was kind of the motivation behind that and the decision to take the plunge, so to speak?
Well, I always wanted to write a comic book, and it was always the plan. It was always the goal. And it's interesting because I think everybody that thinks about creating a thing, whether it's like a movie or a podcast or a YouTube channel or anything like that, you're always like, yeah, I want to do it. But you never realize how to do it. You never think about like, oh, it's actually quite easier just to, you know, get off your ass and do it. Like, you know, you always go to those writing conferences and people are like, well, how do I write? And you just do it. And so we eventually got to a point where, me and my writing partner, Ashley Victoria Robinson, we were just like, let's figure out a comic book. Let's do a comic book. And she blurted out the name Jupiter Jet. She's like, I've always wanted to write a character called Jupiter Jet. And as soon as she said that, I immediately just out of the blue was like, it's a redhead girl with a jetpack. And from there, like, we kind of planned the first arc of Jupiter Jet, and even the ending that it was in issue 5 that just came out this, very recently, hasn't changed since that meeting 2 years ago. And from there it was, oh, let's put it together, because we have to do a Kickstarter, because we have to pay an artist, all kinds of stuff like that. And that started the ball rolling.
Yeah. And I wonder, for our listeners that aren't familiar, if you could give a quick overview of the story. Obviously, we don't want to go too spoilery here because we want everyone to enjoy it for themselves. But just give them an idea what the story is all about.
Jupiter Jet is the story of a 16-year-old girl named Jackie Johnson who discovers a mysterious jetpack that her father invented. Now, her and her brother are orphans, of course, and they decided to take the jetpack to rob from the rich and give to the poor, and also pay their rent. And One day they steal, get a big heist from a giant blimp. And inside that giant heist, they discover a mysterious glowing green pyramid that they probably shouldn't have stolen. And that kicks off the inciting incident because the owners of that pyramid want it back. And they have now just stepped into a much larger, a much weirder, a much more dangerous world than they ever predicted.
Yeah, it's a whole heck of a lot of fun, and I really think it's accessible for everyone. And I have to give you and Ashley kudos. When I first read it, I don't know why I had this preconception, but I thought it was going to be a little less sophisticated. You know, I would say it still is all ages. I mean, there's nothing in there that would, you know, preclude a, you know, young reader from reading it. But I don't think I expected – there's a little bit of, you know, darkness there with the, you know, them being orphans and such. But there's really a lot more layers to the story than I expected. You know, I kind of expected more of a, like almost a Teen Titan or Young Titans kind of thing. And it's really not that. You guys really fleshed out the world and made it more sophisticated. Did you aim to make it kind of for all ages, not just young readers?
Yes, that was intentional. And I appreciate you saying that and or like pointing that out and finding that. We knew going into this game of all ages that all ages comic books right now has sort of a bad connotation, and we kind of want to get rid of that. We don't think that's a bad connotation, so we truly want to write the book that you could give to anybody. You could give to your grandmother, you give to your dad, you can give to your five-year-old little son or daughter. Because I when I was growing up into comic books, again, I picked up that Batman issue and I could read it at 7 or 8 and it was perfectly fine. But I think an adult could also read it and get enjoyment out of it. And the problem is I think now you can't give Batman to a 10-year-old. It's too adult. People's arms are getting chopped off left and right. They're dealing with some very heady issues. And to me, I think that's a problem. So I wanted to create the book and we wanted to create the book, excuse me, that, you could give to everybody. And so like, that's deliciously peppered in there. Like we wanted to have the style and the feel for the kids, but all the mysteries and the subplots and all that stuff like that, that's for like the more adult reader. And if the kids don't see that, that's fine. Like they'll pick it up the second time they read it or the third time they read it. But all the adults, like it's there. Like we wanted you to show you that like this world's a lot bigger than a girl with just a jetpack. And, there's stuff peppered in every issue, like even issue one that shows you like where we want to go in like our volume 2 or volume 3 or volume 4 and on and on and on.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is the kind of the setting, the world you've created. You know, you're reading along and it's not overt. And so as a reader, I found myself kind of bringing my own kind of experiences. Oh, so this is kind of like, you know, 1930s, like gangster kind of thing. But then you guys would kind of flip that and, you know, you have like the futuristic stuff. So I got a little bit of a Rocketeer feel, but I got a little bit of steampunk feel. And then when we find out at the end, the big twist, then it makes sense why you can't really necessarily pin down the setting. So was that something that you and Ashley had fun playing with?
Yeah, that is. And the big twist that we that I won't spoil is the thing that we came up with in the very first meeting. When you get to issue 5, if true believers, you ever get there to issue 5 of Jupiter Jet, you'll see a double page spread that will reveal everything we're talking about. And that we came up with it in that first meeting. So it was the idea of that this is a world that we're very familiar with, yet it's very different, you know, because we invented this thing called the Skyway. So like all these buildings have like these glass walkways between them, which if you know, you remember our 1935, that's not correct. Like that, right. We didn't have that technology. We didn't do that stuff. So it's little stuff like that. And also like there are robots in this world. But nobody seems to bat an eye at these robots. Like everybody's kind of like, yeah, there are robots around. There were no robots in 1935. So it's the idea that like, as you read each issue of Jupiter Jet, we wanted you to be like, something's wrong. Like there's something about this world that we don't know. And then when you get that reveal in issue 5, you're like, oh, now I get it. And now I understand all the references and stuff like that. It's funny. There's a bunch of stuff that we cut because there were certain times that we could play towards that. And sometimes we were just like, we ran out of page space. I actually wanted to throw in Beatles lyrics. into dialogue. I wanted like people to be like start saying Beatles lyrics. I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I knew that people would recognize and people would be like, how, why is this character saying a line from a Beatles song? And I kind of wanted that to also hint at like, how would these characters from 1935 know Beatles songs?
Yeah, that's really, that would have been really, I don't know what I would have thought of that. It definitely would have been another clue that, hey, this is not quite what we were expecting.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your artist, Ben Matsuya. How did you come across his work and choose him to work with you on the title?
So I say this on a lot of interviews and podcasts, but the best thing about Ben Matsuya is that he was a fan of mine. So I do like a lot of podcasts and videos on the internet and stuff like that. And Ben drew a piece of fan art with me of me and shared it on Twitter. And I saw it and I loved it. And I asked him, hey, your art looks great. Do you have any sequential pages? And he did. He had a website. He did. And I loved it. And so from that point, like, as soon as I saw his art, I immediately showed him to Ashley and was like, this, I think this is our guy. This is because we were working on Jupiter Jet at that time. And we were looking for an artist. And I was like, I think this is our guy. And because he had the material to back up his skill, we hired him on the spot. We gave him a paid job. So like, if you're out there as a writer, an editor, an artist, have your work online, because you never know when somebody's going to like contact you and be like, hey, I want to give you money to do this thing. It's funny because we're always looking for artists for other projects, and Twitter is like one of the easiest ways that I'll find artists. I'm always following artists on Twitter, because if I see your art online and I like it, I'll park you. Like, I'll follow you because I'll be like, you know what? I'll just go through my followers later and see if there's a project that matches with your art style. But so many artists, is interesting, I find, don't have their portfolio online, which kills me, because I'm like, well, your Twitter stuff looks cool, but like, if you can't tell a story, I don't know if I want to hire you. But Ben is amazing because we gave him like a paragraph of description. We're like, this is what we think Jupiter Jet looks like. This is her attitude. This is the kind of feel she is. And he gave us an image back that right out of the gate was perfect. It's the image that we have on, that we had on top of our Kickstarter, Jupiter Jet, where she's like sort of in a circle. It became our issue one cover B. So for our first issue, we had a regular cover by Ben where she's like sort of coming at camera. We had a cover C by John Boy Myers, who drew Teen Titans. And then our cover B was this like white cover, and it's Jackie, Jupiter Jet, kind of in a, like, kind of like a little pose, kind of like an interesting, in a blue circle. That's the very first piece of art that Ben ever drew for us. And it was like right out of the gate, so perfect that I was like, this is it. This is the guy. This is great. And that's why like it's on that cover. And like, I use it everywhere because it's so amazing that Ben took that idea. And this is the amazing thing about collaboration and working with somebody awesome, is that they take your idea and they make it better.
Yeah, he really kind of nailed that futuristic yet kind of throwback feel, you know, kind of like, again, to mention the Rocketeer is what I keep coming back to, what it kind of reminded me of. So yeah, that's awesome that you found him like that, and definitely good advice. I think, you know, I've talked to people like Mark Silvestri and Mark Brooks, and they always mention there's no excuses if you're an artist wanting to break into comics these days. It's so much easier now that the internet is there. Get your stuff out there for people to see. And, you know, like Jason was saying, if you want to be a writer, write. If you want to be an artist, you know, work on your craft, put it out there. You never know who might find it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's and I know lots of writers out there, actually, especially comic book writers, that's exactly how they find their next artist. And I'm always looking for that next artist on like Twitter or Instagram.
So I wonder if you could talk a little bit, Jason, about some of your inspiration, some of the writers that you kind of look up to, and maybe where you specifically drew some inspiration for the story that you and Ashley told in Jupiter Jet 1-5.
You know, we'd be remiss without saying, you know, the Rocketeer is a little bit of inspiration. And it's funny, Ashley had not seen the Rocketeer before we started Jupiter Jet. And so I made her watch it just because I was like, everybody's going to compare us to the Rocketeer. So we have to have that in our wheelhouse so that we don't copy it.
Right.
You know, and I think we did a pretty good job with that, but, it's funny. My biggest inspiration, of course, is, Kurt Busiek, of Astro City, because I love the idea of, you know, not every issue of Astro City is a major issue, but you feel something from every issue. Like you feel a character moment or a character beat from every issue. And so that was like a big thing, inspiration that I took from me. I also know during scripting of this, we looked a lot at these titles called Batman Adventures and Superman Adventures. Now, these were comic book series that were published in the 90s through DC, and they were tie-ins into Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series. They're written mostly by Ty Burnett, but Mark Miller writes a lot of Superman Adventures. That was his first DC work before he blew big. And if you look at these titles, I've later learned in interviews that they give them restrictions, that they could only do a maximum of 5 panels per page and so many stuff like that. And they had to finish like every adventure in one issue. So we would look at a lot of their issues and kind of see like, okay, where do they focus on the moments? Where do they have the moments? Like those were the kids' comics of the days. But the interesting thing is that I have all those trade paperbacks because they're amazing reads and they still hold up and they don't talk down to kids at all. Like me as an adult, I can read that Superman issue of Superman Adventures and be like, that's a pretty damn good Superman story. So we took a lot of inspiration from that, from Superman Adventures and Batman Adventures, I think the most, because it was like, this is the style that we really want to hit because it's an adventure for an adult, but you still feel something and you still get that wow, you know, that big wow thing, of course. So that I think is probably a lot of inspiration for the series.
You know, if you hadn't mentioned those titles specifically, I probably wouldn't have made the connection. But now that you say that, I can definitely see a similar way of telling the story sequentially. I think that, you know, by limiting the dialogue and everything and the type of art in those books, it's really a pretty kind of prototypical way of telling a comic book story, you know, from panel to panel. So that's mm-hmm. interesting that you drew from there. I wonder if you could tell us what the biggest challenge was. You know, you and Ashley chose to take this plunge. What was the part that you were like, oh, that was harder than I expected?
I would say two things. One is that when you're an independent comic book creator, especially like working at a company that's not Marvel and it's not DC. When you're the creator, the writer of it, you're in charge of everything. So you're the one that sets the schedule. You're the one that is emailing the letterer or the colorist or even the artist when they're late. You're the one that is promoting the book. You're the one that's turning the book into the editor. And you sort of become, just with one book, you become a publishing company and you kind of have to act like a publishing company. And that's an aspect of this that I didn't think we were going to have to deal with. Like, I thought we were kind of like write the book, everybody would do their job and that would be it. And no, like the buck on this book, like stopped with me and Ashley every time. So that was something that was really challenging. The other challenging thing was our last issue was issue 5, because we had to end the series. You know, close the volume of the 5 issues with the possibility that we may never get another volume of this, but also leave it open. So is this very test ground of like, okay, like, is this a satisfying ending? If we never, ever come back to this, is this a satisfying ending or does this leave it open enough? And there are some scenes that we had planned to be in that final issue from the very beginning. Like from beating out the series at the very beginning, and when we actually got to writing issue 5, they had to be cut because we ran out of room. And so a lot of it just came down to being like, okay, who's the focus of the story? Well, it's Jackie. And if the scene is not about Jackie, forget it. Like cut it out of the issue. And you know, I'm certain we'll see those scenes again, if we ever get to come back to Jupiter Jet. But that was writing that last issue for a 5-issue miniseries is very interesting.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a kind of a tough tightrope to walk between. If, like you said, if this is the end, have it be, you know, satisfying enough, but also leaving it open to more mm-hmm. stories. And how's the reception been? Have a lot of people been picking up the book?
Yeah, it's been really good. The biggest compliment we've gotten is that we've had a lot of comic book shops tell us that when a little girl comes into the store and she doesn't like superheroes, that they'll hand them Jupiter Jet and they love it. So the reception's been really good. Comicosity gave us a 10 out of 10 on our final issue. It's been really positive.
And you're still in the early stages of deciding whether or not it's going to be able to continue?
Well, we definitely want it to continue. And I'll line it out a little bit. We definitely want it to continue. I think we have to wait until the trade sales before Action Lab will give us the go ahead.
Got it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned that you can kind of see it in the story. It's not just the story of Jackie and her brother in this that you can tell, right? I mean, there's so many different, I mean, you could tell the story of the villain, the Praetorian. There's stories to tell there. There's stories of kind of this resistance movement that's in the story. I mean, it seems like you and Ashley really kind of laid the foundation in Jupiter Jet for a whole superhero universe in a way.
Yeah, there's a lot more that we could tell in this universe. And we did that intentionally. We'd love to tell more. In a perfect world, Jupiter Jet would be 5 volumes. And this is volume 1. And we would like to do kind of the Harry Potter thing where every volume skips ahead a year. So we meet Jackie a year older each time so that she would end volume 1 as like 21. And I will say, like, we know where we're going with this. Like, we know like what the ending of volume 5 is. And we've already decided like who Jackie marries.
Wow.
We know who her husband is. And if you're looking for like a lot of clues for like where this could go and where it could be, it's kind of all in the backup. The backup series that like we got to do because of Kickstarter, we did this Origin of the Jetpack 2-parter, and we decided to make it about their parents. Mm-hmm. Because their parents are, you know, not around in the first one. And so like everything, if you're looking for ideas of like, oh, what could Jupiter Jet volume 2 be? There's a lot of clues in the backup between her parents. Like, it's all there because we actually wrote the main series first and then we wrote the backup secondary, like as the second thing. So we were able to like kind of use the backup and look at the series complete and kind of be like, we didn't mention anything about this, or we didn't mention anything about this. Let's put that in the backup.
Yeah, I enjoyed the backup very much. And what I also found interesting was that in a very limited amount of space, it is packed full of information. You really do get a lot of information, and it helps to give you understanding into even though it's, as you said, about the parents, it gives you understanding into Jackie and Chuck. So mm-hmm. kudos.
Yeah, and that was intent. Like, we did that intentional as well. So I appreciate that. Because it was the idea that, like, I actually planned them out to, to complement the issue. Like, if we learned about something in the issue, then, like, it's like, okay, well, let's tell you a little bit more about it in the backup.
Yeah, I definitely saw that. And the other thing that I have to compliment you on, and a good thing is that I'm finding this to be the case more often. Usually, and you being a longtime comic reader will probably appreciate this. Usually, a first time writer writing a comic, just because the flow is so different, the toughest thing to get down is often pacing. And you know, you kind of take it with a grain of salt when it's a creator who's a writer who's just starting out, and you kind of give them a pass on it before they really dial it in. But you and Ashley nailed the pacing on this thing so well.
Thank you.
And not only did you nail the pacing with the main stories, but again, going to that backup, which is, you know, paced much quicker because you have so much less real estate to work with. I mean, the fact that you paced it the two differently and you nailed them both, I mean, I have to take my hat off to you. Did you find the pacing to be the toughest part of actually sitting down and writing it?
Not really. I thought the pacing for the backup was really hard because, again, yeah, each time we only had two pages and you had to figure out, okay, how can you sort of make somebody feel satisfied yet tell a story in two pages? That's really tough.
Right.
You know, and that working that out was really hard. We actually found compression more to be the harder thing in the main stories. It's about the idea of, like, we would have these ideas and we'd be like, oh man, we don't have enough pages. Like, we don't have enough room for all this stuff. So eventually, you know, we would always write, our scripts are always fatter than the actual issues. And then it becomes a thing of like, no, cut that scene, cut that dialogue, cut that moment. You know, that's kind of like what it ended up being on the main story.
Got it. Got it. Well, yeah, I think the book's incredible. Listeners, I think you need to go out and pick it up. As Jason said, issue 5 just came out recently. I think it was the 24th? The 18th. That's right. The 18th of April. And the trade paperback is on its way. Do you have a release date for that yet?
It comes out May 30th, but you can pre-order it at your comic book store right now, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. Everywhere you can order books right now, you can pre-order it.
Awesome. And I'll be reminding you, listeners, when it drops. So always pre-order to make sure that you don't miss out, especially on a book like Jupiter Jet, where it comes from a smaller publisher. It's not one of the big two. Your comic book shop may not have it, so make sure you let them know. Even if you don't pay for it ahead of time, if you let them know you're interested in it, they're more likely to have it in stock for you. So again, I'll remind you when the time gets closer. Now, Jason, I wonder, you know, we talked about telling more stories in the world of Jupiter Jet. Any aspirations to expand into other properties? Like, I know you're a huge Star Trek fan. Obviously, you love DC. A smaller publisher like Valiant, perhaps, always looking for talent. Any aspirations to kind of make this more of a full-time thing?
Yes, there are aspirations to make it more of a full-time thing. It's always the this, you know, a little bit of a pulling back the curtain a little bit. It's always a thing when you're starting out, like, you have to pay for your comic books. So as of right now, we can only do as many comic books as we can pay for,
right?
Because we're not a giant publishing company. So, you know, we've out to different publishers, and that would be a goal eventually. Yes, to get it out there. I mean, because I've always said that, like, I could consider my life complete if I could just see my name on a Superman comic book. And I don't care if I only wrote one page in it. Or if I just wrote like the back, you know, the credits, like, I don't care. Like, if I saw my name in a Superman comic book, I'd be like, life complete. So yeah, there are other hopes and we have other projects coming up. We have another book that we're going to be launching later this year, called Science. But that's about as much as I can say about it right now.
All right. Well, I'll definitely keep my ears open. And of course, once it's announced, if you and Ashley want to come on and talk about it, of course, you're always welcome.
Oh, man. Cool. Totally.
Let's shift gears here. You know, as you said, you put out a lot of content. You do a lot of other, you know, podcasts and YouTube videos and such. And you hosted DC All Access for a good long while. So, and now you're on the creator side. So I feel like you have kind of a unique perspective and an insight, having, you know, grown up with comics and read them all your life, and then kind of got behind the curtain, so to speak, and now have done the creator thing. So I feel like you're a great person to talk about the future of the industry. So, you know, not that it's an easy question to answer, but how do you feel about the industry overall right now and where it's headed?
You know, I think the comic book industry is in a really interesting place right now. Because I think that everybody's seeing that change is coming, and some people are open to it and some people aren't open to it. And, you know, I don't even know like what that change is, but I think the one thing you can tell about our comic book industry, and I think it's the reason why so many people are maybe frustrated about right now, there's a big section of the comic book fandom that's very frustrated. And I think part of that is because we all sense this change is coming, but, you know, some people are looking forward to it and some people don't want to do it. You know, and again, I don't know how soon that change is coming, or I don't know when that change is coming, but it's one of the things of like, we can all look at, the comic book industry right now, and we can tell that with shrinking and shrinking audiences, with less and less diminishing returns, right? We can't keep just going the way we're going. Like, it's not going to work. Like, it's really, really not going to work. So what is the change that's going to, you know, knock everybody's socks off? Or what is the change that's going to bring more readers in? And again, I don't really know what that idea is exactly, because if I knew what that idea is, I'd be Jeff Bezos and like control everything. I'd already like copyright that $1 million idea. But I know there's an idea out there, and I don't know where exactly it is. And I think we're really close to it. But I don't know who's going to be the one to do it. Sorry, that's very general and very vague, but that's kind of how I feel about the comic book industry. Cause I think that this is, I don't think the comic book industry is going anywhere, but I think we could see a fundamental shift in how the comic book industry works.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's such an interesting time. As you yourself mentioned, you know, here it's never been more accepted to be a comic reader, right? And have these heroes be in pop culture. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't really talk about it. It was, you know, people made fun of you for reading comics. And now all of a sudden it's the cool thing, right? But at the same time, yeah, the actual readership of the comics is down. And when you look at even the big parent companies of you know, DC and Marvel, Warner Brothers and Disney, the actual revenue generated by comic book sales is probably like 1%, if that, right? I mean, they're making millions of dollars off the movies and the licenses and everything. And yet at the same time, and expanding beyond the big two, I feel like we're in a golden age as far as there's never been as many good stories
out. I agree with that.
But they're fighting for a lesser and lesser amount of readers. And so the marketplace is just really crowded. So yeah, I don't think it's sustainable either, but it's at the same time, it change is scary, but it can be exciting.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great statement. I cannot think of another time of there are just so many good comic books out there. Like, there's so many. And, you know, it is. I don't know what that change is, because it's like with so many good stories out there, so many good comic books, so many good artists, the audience should increase, not decrease. And you are correct. Like, I remember that too. When I was a kid, yeah, you didn't tell anybody you read comic books. And now everybody reads comic books. It doesn't matter. But that's not translating to sales. So, yeah, I don't know what that change is, but it's a shame, because again, the idea, it's not, the problem is not the ideas, because there are lots of good comic books out there. There's so many good comic books out there that I don't have time to read them all.
Yep. Same here.
I'm constantly like having people be like, have you read this yet? And I'm like, no, I have a pile that's like 15 books high, man. I'll get to it maybe next year. I don't know. And what a great time to live in. Like, it is a great time, especially independent comic books. Independent comic books are amazing right now. And there's so many good ones, but yeah, I don't know what it is. And I think there is a change. I don't know what that change is. And like, I hope it's soon.
Yeah. And the other thing about living in this day and age of these great stories and creators, and add social media to that. Because I think you and Ashley, when you're at Portland, was it Portland Comic Con?
Yeah, I went to Wizard World Portland.
That's what it was, right? You went and talked to some kids at an elementary school, right? And I remember seeing that on Twitter and thinking to myself, man, when I was that age in fifth grade, if I would have had some of these comic writers come in that I was reading their books, I would have been just – I don't even know. I would have been like an emotional mess. These guys were like untouchable to me, right? I looked up to them, and there were these stories, and it was so awesome. And we have that now with social media, you know, as you said, independent. And I know you help a lot of people promote their books, because here you yourself have now created a book. And so it's never been easier to reach out to someone, you know, via social media and say, hey, let me help you talk about your book. Let me, you know, ask a question about something I didn't understand and get that interaction. I mean, to me, that is amazing. And it's just one more reason why I can't believe there aren't more comic book readers.
Yeah, it is a crazy world. A friend of mine is a high school teacher elementary teacher in Portland. And he asked, he knew we were going to be in town because we were going to have dinner. And he asked, he's like, would you want to come in and talk to my class about writing? Because we're currently in rewriting and stuff like that. And he's like, I think they would get a kick from talking to comic book writers. And I was like, oh, yes, of course. And they asked some of the most amazing questions, and they were so curious. And there was like a couple kids in there that you could tell, like, they had thought about it. They thought about, like, they were like, oh, I'm thinking about being a comic book writer, but I didn't know it was possible. And then you could tell, like, by asking us questions, because they were the ones that kept asking us questions. You were like, oh, you guys want to write comic books too. And now that, like, we're standing in front of you, handing you copies of our book, it becomes real to you. And that was, like, such an amazing feeling. But you're right. Like, there's no gatekeepers anymore, especially, like, with stuff like webtoons and stuff like that. Like, you can put your comic book out on the internet immediately. And especially with Kickstarter, like, you can pre-sell your comic book. You don't even need Diamond. You can just skip Diamond altogether. Just go right to Kickstarter. Yeah, it's an amazing time. I will say, like, the great thing is that when you enter the sort of comic book writer community and you start, you know, being friends with people and, you know, you share their book, they'll share yours. It's very friendly, and no writer I've found, like, is competitive against the other writer. It's all like, no, we're all in this together. 'Cause if your comic works, my comic works, and it's all good. And it's funny. I won't tell you who this is, but I reached out to, a really, really big comic book writer. He's a novelist as well. Like, he does big stuff. I reached out to him and I was like, hey man, I have this comic book coming out. You know, here it is to read. If you like it, share it. If not, no worries. And I'll leave you alone. Then I won't knock on your mansion anymore. And he totally agreed. And he was like, of course I'll help you share this and stuff like that. And I thought, wow, what a community that I was even able to reach to this person, to who me is an icon. And he was totally, totally cool and friendly. And that's the thing, man. Like, we're all people at the end of the day. And I think that's the thing about social media, is that, like, if you're just a friendly person to another friendly person, we'll help each other out.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And another thing that's interesting, and I wonder if this affects readership, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, I feel like there was a lot of, and you know, the internet was a little bit of a different place then. I understand that. But I feel like there were a lot more sites, like, you know, comicbook.com wasn't owned by CBS, and, you know, CBR, Comic Book Resources, wasn't owned by a big, you know, multinational corporation. And I feel like, and not to say that these sites don't still produce good content, but I feel like they were more focused on the comics back then as opposed to the comic book related kind of stuff. And I just wonder, I mean, is comics journalism even a thing anymore? It's kind of, it's so tough. It's such a strange place. I constantly have people asking me, well, where do you go for your comic news? Because it's kind of tough now. A lot of these sites are almost in partnership, and it's hard to get that objective look at books. So I wonder,
do you have any favorites? Like, are there any sites out there that you really dig?
You know, I go to the Comics Beat, but that's more kind of insider kind of thing about the creators themselves. I go to Bleeding Cool. I take everything I read there with a grain of salt, because you never know. I still check out Newsarama and Comic Book Resources, but it's really, I mean, it's kind of tough, you know. It just seems like there's a vacuum there. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's weird, you know, but it's not just comic book journalism. It's almost all journalism, especially pop culture journalism right now, because I think we've got into a scary slope, because the dark side of social media is that some person, some creator, some actor, director, writer, whatever, will tweet, oh man, going to set today. And then you'll see every site run an article based on the tweet, and it'll be one sentence of information basically telling you this actor, this writer, this creator said they were going to set. And then it's 300 words, because they have to hit SEO, search engine optimization, if you don't know what that is, basically speculating on what set are they going to. Oh, I bet they're going to the Batman set. That's exactly where they're going. No, they're going to the Captain Marvel set. And so it's not really a news article at all. It's three paragraphs of pure BS based around a tweet. And I find that almost every pop culture site is that now. It's speculation articles about speculation. And there's nothing to that. There's no editorials I find anymore. There's no things. So I don't think that that's specifically to comics journalism. I think that's all journalism right now. And it's the idea that, like, people are taking Twitter as news sources, which it is, if it's a valid tweet. But I can't tell you how many articles last year I read when Henry Cavill shared that picture of the black Superman suit.
Yep.
That he later said that he was like, oh, that was an old picture from Man of Steel that I just had left over on my phone. And I thought it would be funny to mess with people. But everybody reported it was like the black suit's confirmed for Justice League. And you're just like, no, it's not. It's a picture.
Yep.
Like, relax, guys. It's tough. I agree with you. But I will say on the counter side of this, you are correct on the thing that, you know, we're reporting more about the comic book movies than we are the comic books itself. And I will tell you that, you know, doing my stuff on my YouTube channel, I find that unless it's tied into a TV show or a movie, nobody cares. And I find that really sad because there are lots of comic book videos that I would love to do, but it does come down to, well, if nobody's going to watch it, I don't really want to spend the 2 days, 3 days making it, you know. Yeah. And on YouTube, that's the sad thing. You can actually literally see that counter. Like, that counter is like, okay, only 5 people have watched this. Oh, that's rough. So I don't know. It is a weird shift, but I think it's the idea, like we talked about with comic books, that the publishing is like 1%, and, you know, movies are billions and billions and billions. Because think about it. The best-selling comic book, okay, the big comic books now, the ones that sell like crazy, 300,000? Like, that's the max now? Like, that's the big dogs. Like, I think Metal got up there. Secret Empire got up there a couple times. It's like 300,000. So they're not selling all the copies of 300,000. They're just not. So is the real comic book audience somewhere between 200,000 and 150,000 people? That's a very, very niche audience when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, look at something like Action Comics 1000, 500,000 pre-ordered copies. That's what, 15, 20 years ago, that's what the top comic would do, by itself. Just, it wasn't, I mean, and here's a landmark issue and 500,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And again, like, I guarantee it that we will see a bunch of those Action Comics 1000s in back issue bins very soon.
Yep.
Because there's no way they sold every one of them. I mean, I think they sold more than, normal, because it's the 1,000th comic book. It's the first time that's ever happened. But, I'm planning on picking up all the variant covers once they hit the back issue bins, because I'm certain they will. And, sorry, I'm poor, and $8 for an issue is very expensive to me.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. And yeah. I was talking to someone at one of the local comic shops here in Phoenix, and he was saying, he's like, yeah, we had people coming in that were buying it who I'd never seen before. They said they'd never bought a comic before, and they just heard about it on the news, and they thought it was going to be worth something, so they'd come and pick one up.
Interesting story. But that's awesome they came in, at least, Yeah,
exactly. Now, whether or not – I mean, it's just like the speculator boom back in the 90s. Some of them are thinking, I'm going to put my kids – through college because I bought, the Death of Superman. Yeah, you and a million other people not quite understanding how supply and demand works. So, well, I want to thank you for joining me, Jason. It's been really fun to sit here and chat with you. Whenever we run into each other at shows, we're always so busy, we don't always get a chance to just sit down and talk. So it's been
true, man.
It's been really enjoyable. I wonder if you want to plug some of your other projects. You're so busy and have so much content out there. Where are some of the other stuff that you're involved in, and where can people find it if they want to check it out?
Probably the biggest thing I do is my podcast called Geek History Lesson. You can find that on iTunes and Spotify and Sound, everywhere you can listen to podcasts. And it's basically me and Ashley break down a character from pop culture or comic books in less than an hour. But everywhere else you can find me, the youtube.com/Jawin. That's JAWIIN. I do videos every single week about Arrow, The Flash, comic books in general, just all kinds of like comic book geekery you can find there. And that's where you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as well. It's at Jawin everywhere.
Awesome. So I'll put the links for all those places in the show notes, listeners. If you want to go and check out Jason's other content, I really encourage you. He's one of us. He loves these comics and stories just as much as we do. And he has some really interesting insights into things a lot of times. So once again, I want to thank Jason for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. And don't forget, listeners, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all the other coverage on pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of good stuff. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. Twitter.com/The Comic Source is where we can be found on Twitter. I always let you guys know on all three platforms whenever I release a new episode, as well as all our convention coverage. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.